My name is Peter Weigel, and I'm a software developer at Facebook. And what I'm going to be presenting today is a very simple but very effective storage system which we use at Facebook to store photos. So let's look at some numbers first to understand the scale at which Facebook operates. Every time when we do this presentation, we just change the numbers. But when I was changing it, I looked at the old numbers and I couldn't believe the growth. So I left the old numbers and I put the new ones for comparison. So the last time we made the presentation was in April 2009. And at that time, we had 15 billion photos. Facebook keeps 4 scaled images for each photo. You can think of it like a normal image or a thumbnail or an album, header, things like that. And that translated to 1.5 petabytes of data. At that time, we had about 220 million photos uploaded per week. So that was about 25 terabytes weekly. And we served at the peak about 550,000 images per second. So the current numbers. Stop betting. No more bets. 65 billion photos. We really had a truly explosive growth. That translated to 20 petabytes of data. We upload 1 billion photos every week, so we consume 60 terabytes currently. At that peak, we serve 1 million images per second. So before we look at the new storage system, Haystack, we will look at the old infrastructure, and we will look at the problems we had with that and why it didn't scale. So these are the typical components of a website serving images. Nothing new here. It's very simple, and Facebook followed the same design at the beginning. Every image is stored as a single file on the backend storage, which is a network-attached storage accessed via NFS protocol. So let's look at the read path real quick. So in the first step, the browser requests a page from the web server. The web server generates the page, and it embeds the URL for all of the images, including the path names for the images, in the web page. It returns it to the browser, which then goes to the external content delivery network provider, CDN, and asks for the image. The CDN, if the image is cached, then it returns it to the browser. In this case, it has a miss, and it contacts one of the website's photo store servers. The photo store server retrieves the file path name from the URL and gets it over NFS from one of the NAS appliances. It returns it to the server, which then returns it to the CDN. Also, DSR could be used in this way as well. The CDN then caches the image and then returns it to the browser. So why didn't it work? There are several reasons. The design actually works fine, the NFS-based design, if you have a small working set and if the CDN covers you. The typical website has a small working set. Usually, it's like the most recently uploaded images. And they very infrequently access the old content. And a typical website has a very high CDN hit rate. Because we have such a large image set, our CDN hit rate is actually quite small. It's only like 80%. And we have a large working set. And also, we are a social networking website, and we tend to generate a lot of requests for older images. You can think of it like when you friend a new friend, the first thing you go and you look at the photos of a friend. Tagging also influences this as well. People tag objects on the photos or people on the photos. And then this tag can lead us to go suddenly to a photo which hasn't been accessed for a long time. So we have a very large amount of requests going to the backend store because the CDN has a large, relatively large miss rate. So what happens on the NFS backend then, on the NAS appliance, is that practically most of the I/O bandwidth gets wasted to do small metadata IOs. As I said, each image was stored as a single file. So we had billions of files, that translates to billions of directory entries, that translates to billions of inodes, and billions of extent maps or block maps in ext3 case. So it's pretty much bottlenecked on the I/O, just on the metadata. You had to read all this metadata before you even retrieve the first byte of the image. And then you got into the questions like fragmentations of the actual file. So when we looked at the performance at the beginnings, it took almost 10 IOPS to retrieve an image, even though we knew that the image size was small enough that it could be retrieved in like one IO. That was at the time when we had large directories. We had several thousand files in the directories, so most of the IOPS were consumed through the directory lookups. So then we decreased the size of the directory by putting only hundreds of files, and we were sharding the files across the directories. That resulted in like 3 IOPS, what we would expect: one directory lookup, inode read, and the actual data read. We even implemented a file handle cache, which allowed us to read by file ID, so we avoided the directory lookup. But even that, because the cache size was limited, it resulted in around 2.5 IOPS. So what we needed was a simple system which would be optimized for random reads, which would preferably do retrieval of an object in one I/O, and which could be deployed on any cheap commodity storage at the time. So we switched to a Haystack design. Most of the components are still there. The new components are the Haystack cache, which is a local cache, which we put in front of the CDN. And then we have a Haystack directory and a Haystack store. Haystack store is the new component, which is the storage component. And we are going to cover these components one by one. So let's look at the Haystack store at first. So the Haystack store replaces the photo server tier and the NAS appliance tier in the NFS-based design. It can be broken down into 4 functional layers: storage file system, the Haystack driver, and the Haystack photo server at the top. We will look at this functional layer one by one from the bottom to top. So you can think our typical unit is a 2U node, which has a CPU, some memory. I'll come to that, how much memory we need. It has, on average, it has 12 enterprise class serial ATA 1 TB drives, and they are configured in a single volume as RAID 6, 10+2. On top of this single volume, we create a large, around 10 TB file system. We chose XFS at the time. And it's still actually performing quite well. In this file system, we create 100 haystacks. The simplest way to think about a haystack is simply a big file which contains the images. It's a log-structured append-only object, and it contains needles as the object abstractions. In our case, it's the images. So we create about these 100 haystacks per node, and each is about 100 gigabytes, a little less because of the overhead. So we shrunk from going from billions of files into only 100 files per node. So let's look quickly at the how the Haystack file actually looks. It's very simple. It has a superblock, which has a version number, obviously, and some other boring data, which we are not going to go into. Each needle, the superblock is followed by needles. Each needle is prefixed with a header, immediately followed by a data, a footer, and each needle is padded to 64 bytes. The most interesting fields here are the key and the alternate key. In the photo case, the key would be the 64-bit key for the photo, and the alternate key would be a 32-bit key, which signifies the size of the image. As I said, we have 4 images per photo. So that signifies the size of the image which we want to store. We have some flags, then there is the size of the data. The footer contains the data checksum. Both the header and the footer have magic numbers which are used for reconstruction of the haystack in case of corruption, which we don't have. Each haystack file has a corresponding index file. This one has a fixed size index record, and there is one index record for each needle, and they have to be in the same order. It's very simple. It has a subset of the header metadata, so it has the key, alternate key, and it also has the offset of the needle in the haystack file. So who uses this file? It's the Haystack photo server. The Haystack photo server is the top layer of the Haystack store, and it accepts HTTP requests and translates them to corresponding Haystack operations. So this photo server at the startup, it reads the index files. It's a single file for each Haystack. It reads it in a big, large sequential IOPS, and it builds an index of all of the images contained in a Haystack. We create a hash table in memory, and for each photo, we have this record there. So each photo has four images, so there is a 64-bit photo key, and each image is then indexed by the 32-bit offset and a 16-bit size. We can use 32-bit offset because, as I said, each needle is padded to 64 bytes, so that de facto defines a block size for the Haystack, so the offsets and also the sizes are in those blocks. So this compact index we need for 10 terabyte of images, we need about 5 gigabytes. So it's very compact, and we went down from around 600 bytes per inode, which is the in-core overhead in Linux for XFS inode, we went down to like 8 bytes per image. So we can look at these store operations. First, the read. The read is very simple. The photo server gets the HTTP request, and it finds out from the URL the what image and what Haystack you are reading it from. It goes to the appropriate hash table. It looks up the offset and the size of the image, and it, in one I/O, it retrieves the actual image from the disk. So I'm saying one I/O, but it depends. So when can the one I/O be turned into multiple I/Os? There are three cases. First, if the size of the image exceeds the maximum size of the device. That actually doesn't happen for us. Our images are smaller. They are scaled down. The second time is when we cross the extent boundaries of the file system file. That doesn't happen, or it happens very rarely because we use XFS. XFS is extent-based file system, and it can grow by really large extents. We actually use alloc size mount option, which grows the file by 1 gigabyte extents, and it works extremely well for us. And the third case, it's going to turn not into two IOs, but when we cross the stripe boundary, then it's going to hit two disks. And that's the case we don't actually want, because then it can halve the performance. But I looked at the index index metadata, and I assumed the file, Haystack file, would be aligned on the stripe boundary, and I calculated how many percent of the needles would cross a stripe boundary. And it turns out that it's only like 6 or 7% of the needles cross the stripe boundary. Saying that, we are increasing the quality of the pictures all the time. In fact, we just released high-res photos, which are going to be quite larger. And so we are going to be probably bumping the stripe size. The next operation we are going to look at is multi-write. Multi-write is very simple. It simply takes the new images. We have multi-write because users tend to upload more than one image at a time. So to save how many network connections we need to do, we simply package multiple images in one request, and we send it to the photo server to write into Haystack store. So first, we asynchronously append images one by one to the Haystack file. At this time, it's all in the page cache. After we after that, we flush by single F data sync. So the images get flushed, and the size of the file increases to reflect the new size of the Haystack file. Then we asynchronously append index records to the index file. The index file is redundant. It can be completely rebuilt from the Haystack file, and so we don't flush it. We flush it only if we have too many dirty records to shorten the recovery time on the startup. And then we update the in-core index. Multi-write is also a modify operation because it's an append-only, a log-structured storage system. So if you want to modify a photo, you need to write a new version of it. So if you have two photos with the same key, the one with the larger offset is the one which is valid. Delete is very simple. Delete just marks the photo as deleted in the flags. And it updates also the in-core index. But it's, of course, not persistent. So on the startup, you can get another request for a photo. It gets read, and then we mark it in core again as deleted. But on the disk, it's marked as deleted. How do we reclaim the space? It happens only asynchronously by compaction. We simply write a new haystack. So we create an empty haystack, we walk the old haystack, and we copy all of the needles, we skip the deleted needles and the duplicate needles, which can arise via the modification. And at the end, we atomically swap the haystacks. It's an online operation. The haystack can be accepting reads, writes, or deletes at the same time as the compaction is going on. So we covered the haystack store. We can look very quickly on the haystack directory. Each image is stored exactly in one logical volume. And each logical volume consists of three haystacks. So we have three copies for each image. These haystacks are in fact on different nodes in different racks, and in fact one copy is in a different geographically distant data center. Since the haystack directory has the mapping, it also participates in the URL generation for the image. Here are the components of the URL. There is the external CDN, optional. There is the local cache. There is the actual haystack node and the ID of the image. So in this case, it would be logical volume ID and then image ID. The image ID would have the photo ID plus also the size of the scaled image which you want to retrieve. Since it knows and generates the URL, it knows the mapping and generates the URL, it participates in the load balancing for reads, where it load balances across the three physical haystacks. And it also load balances for writes to pick up the next logical volume to write to. And it also decides on the caching strategy as well. Do you want to cache it locally or do you want to cache it externally? So now we can look at the photo upload. First, the browser uploads the photos to the web server. The web server scales the photos, creates the four images, consults the haystack directory, and asks for the next logical volume to write these images to. The haystack directory returns the logical volume, and then the web server writes to the haystack store. We write synchronously, all three copies. Sounds like an expensive operation, especially if you have to go across, let's say, from East Coast to West Coast, but it's not. The bottleneck is really in this picture from browser to the web server on the upload from the user PC to our web server. So even though it seems like it's an expensive latency-wise operation, it's not. And it makes the design really simple. And it also allowed us to deploy it very quickly. If any of those writes fail, we pick up new logical volume ID and repeat the process until we find one which eventually succeeds. And then we return success or failure. Let's look at the photo download. So the browser requests a page from the web server. The web server generates the web page and then embeds the URL for all of the images in the web page by consulting the haystack directory. So once the browser had the web page with the URLs for the images, it consults the CDN. The CDN, in this case, has a miss, and it goes, and first it consults our local haystack cache. The haystack cache then turns up and retrieves the image on a miss, of course, which in this case is a miss. It turns to the haystack store, and it retrieves the haystack node, IP, and the logical volume ID from the URL, everything, and then talks to the haystack store, and it retrieves over HTTP the requested image. It returns it to the haystack cache. The haystack cache, in this case, doesn't cache the image because we want to avoid the double caching. But every request does go through the haystack cache. The reason is that if we fail to retrieve the photo from this image, the haystack cache can consult the haystack directory and then find the next haystack node to read it out of the three. So then we return the image to the CDN. The CDN caches the image, and it returns it to the browser. As I said, in some cases, we are playing more and more with expanding our local cache. We are utilizing memory and flash devices. And for a certain percentage of the requests, and depending on the location of the user, we generate direct URLs directly to our local cache, avoiding the external CDN completely. So that's pretty much it. As I said, it's a simple and effective storage system. It's optimized for random reads. it does satisfy the requirement, which was do only the one I/O, which is pretty much what's needed for the object read. We use the cheap commodity storage. We went away from any of the distributed file system protocols. We did HTTP, which allows us to do DSR immediately. It's a very simple driver. The total code is 8,500 lines of code. We do use open source LibEvent and even HTTP, so that's not included here. It took about two engineers, me and Doug Beaver, 4 months from inception to initial deployment. The prototype was done by Jason Sobel. The future work, there is a lot of things. Like as I said, the high-res images are coming. The images are much larger. So we are going to play with the RAID 6 and see if we need to bump the stripe size. Or if we want to go to RAID 10 and have more I/O bandwidth available for us, which would also further limit our dependency on the external CDN. We are further trying to reduce the cost. We are looking at the new drives which have some flash embedded on them, in which case we don't have to have the memory at all. We could just put the index directly on some logical volume which would be created out of this flash. We don't know how we're going to be exposed yet. I think Seagate is the only one pushing it. Currently, putting an SSD drive into a node would not be cost effective. Thanks.
Hello, Jason Flynn from Michigan. Could you talk a little bit about whether you found prefetching to be useful and how it fits into this design, or are your reads just so random that it defeats prefetching?
So, as I said, the requests are sometimes totally random. Like, for example, users tend to access the photos either via the album, but what we see more and more is, I don't know the distribution ratio between these two accesses patterns, but also they access it by tagging. And the prefetching is then done in the browser. We have the JavaScript, so that does it. We did think about it, like should we put some read ahead capabilities into Haystack or something like that, because we do have like all albums in one Haystack and we could like prefetch the whole album. But then people usually just tend to go through the thumbnails and those are usually cached. We don't actually know what's cached and what's not. So what comes down to us is really totally random. What it looks to us is just purely random read access.
Perhaps looking a little, Chris Colahan from Google, perhaps looking a little bit in the future, when you start getting away from CDNs and stuff, you'll see the full access stream. I was wondering if you've considered, can you use social data to figure out what your access stream might look like? Could you figure out, for example, that someone with lots of friends might have more accesses than someone who has no friends?
Again, it's similar to the previous question, and I think that the application, which in this case would be like implemented in the JavaScript, would know much better what the access is going to be when the user actually logs in. When the user logs in, most of the images which are actually downloaded are only the profile photos, and then some small images for the pages and things like that. But when you actually go to the photo page, then they actually prefetch. You know, that's all done in the JavaScript. And so I think that the application level has a much better way of telling us what's going to be needed next and then prefetch it rather than doing it on the Haystack. It also keeps the Haystack simple. And again, everything in Facebook, we tend to move real fast. We have to. We don't have a choice. If you looked at the numbers at the beginning of the presentation, we didn't expect such. We expected the growth, but we didn't expect a growth like that. Going from all the way to 65 billion photos in a year and a half. So we don't have time to work on. Usually our projects are small. It includes very small amount of people, and they have to be short. And so that's why I would like to keep the Haystack simple. And if needed, we might revisit it and then see if some kind of prefetching and read-ahead would be beneficial for some maybe future application. But right now, it doesn't seem to be the pressing point. Right now, it's really how much lower can we go in our cost per gigabyte. That's what it is.
Thank you.
Hi, Vipul from NetApp. My question is about, have you considered the use of, considered migrating needles between haystacks for things like load balancing and all? Or have you found that that's not a use case or something like that? So I'm thinking about using such a design for something beyond just your use case.
So there are several factors which are kind of limiting this. One is we use RAID 6. RAID 6 is great for reads. It is good for writes only, large writes only. It is simply horrible when you have a mixed workload. So if you were doing things like even the compaction, preferably I would like to do only once you fill one node and then simply do the compaction once all the volumes are closed for new writes. So doing things like load balancing and moving things back and forth would require that we would have a different storage because the RAID 6 would not be able to do that. And the second is we are already doing load balancing, so we have a lot of nodes open for writes at the same time. But at the same time, like I put on this last slide, we think we are currently using a hardware RAID, and we are trying to see if we can get rid of it. Could we go to software RAID, or should we go to RAID 10, which is much cheaper? So, you know, that would even further make it more difficult. So then if you have a software RAID, it would be actually much easier to just fill one node, use the local cache for all of the photos which are being uploaded per one node. So fill the one node as fast as you can to one haystack or three copies of haystack, then lock it and go to another machine. So that would be more optimal. So we are not doing anything like that right now, like load balancing. Currently, we have the tools, and the tools are the available I/O bandwidth and the external cache and the local cache. And with these three, we can tweak each of them to make them suitable for any workload so far.
Just a related question. So you said you're planning to launch high resolution images.
We already launched them.
You already launched it.
It's an opt-in. You can download high res. It's not the original, but it's a high res image which will allow you to have a print quality.
Right. But is that functionality supported for existing images? As in, could
no.
you use
it? No, we don't have. We don't so have. Since we don't have the pass, you would have to re-upload it. Yeah. It's mostly because people wanted to be able to print images from Facebook, mm-hmm. and the size which we have now, which is the 720 pixels, that would not be enough.
Yeah. So to connect the two questions, mm-hmm. for people to upload high-res versions of folded images, you would need to migrate.
So when people actually upload, what happens, the first image of the largest size, mm-hmm. is, so you have to re-upload images again.
Hi, I'm Daniel Peng from Google. I'm wondering, what do you get out of having the haystack getting so big to 100 gigabytes? Do you save it file system metadata? Or if you have them smaller, they could be...
It could be smaller, but...
Parallelize the recovery better if you have a node failure?
Not necessarily. The writes are very fast. We have, we have a hardware RAID controller, which has actually 256 megabytes of RAM. Our write latencies are like 2 milliseconds on average. I think it's in the paper as well. The only problem would be, okay, so the reads are coming to the same haystack, which is also open for writes, so there is a reader-writer lock. If that was actually a problem, what we could do, we could actually pre-allocate the whole XFS file and then do direct I/O. And the direct I/O allows both concurrent reads and writes. So we don't see that as a problem right now, and yes, we would like to limit the amount of file system metadata so that all of the file system metadata can be fully cached in the memory in Linux. And so currently we have only 100 files. Actually, because of some bugs, we let it go, and we have some haystacks which are actually even larger, but they run just fine. We limit it. The largest size of the only limit which we have now is 256 gigabytes, because after that you would have to use 64-bit offsets in the index, and then the in-core index would start growing in size. So we don't want that. So we want to keep them under 256 gigabytes. Also, the mapping table, the haystack directory, we want to keep the mapping table as small as possible because that's going to be kind of distributed. And in the future, we are going to have like the haystack directory library, which anybody can link in, and you can pretty much talk to it as a blob store. And it's going to be on demand, and it's going to be kind of stateless. We are going to look completely stateless design of the haystack directory. Thank you.